This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Zimbabwe's President Emmerson Mnangagwa met Friday with ailing opposition leader Morgan Tsvangirai, but ruled out forming a political coalition with him. The opposition welcomed the historic visit, saying it sets the tone for peace ahead of this year's elections.
That's Sebastian Mofu reporting from Harare. We'll have the full story coming up. Also, a recent flare-up in violence in Northwest Central African Republic sends thousands fleeing for their lives. The World Bank says Kenya's economy grew only by 4.9% in 2017 due to drought in the prolonged election period. And the UN Human Rights Office condemns the violent response by government security forces in the DRC against people protesting the refusal of President Joseph Kabila to resign. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. A recent flare-up in violence in Northwest Central African Republic has sent thousands fleeing for their lives. The UN Refugee Agency reports more than 5,000 refugees from CAR have arrived in southern Chad since December 27th. Lisa Schlein reports from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
The new year is off to a bad start for thousands of people forced to flee clashes involving armed groups in the northwestern CAR town of Paoa. The UN Refugee Agency reports an estimated 5,600 refugees have fled to Chad. But UNHCR spokesman Baba Baloche tells VOA that number could be higher.
Chad is the third largest refugee host for refugees from the Central African Republic, with over 75,000 refugees already in the camps. UNHCR is registering the new arrivals. We're also working with our partners and government counterparts to provide aid and assistance to them.
Baloch says many of the refugees have walked long distances to escape the violence in their country and notes that Chad's border with CAR is officially closed. He says, though, the Chadian authorities, in a welcome humanitarian gesture, are allowing refugees to cross the border to seek protection inside Chadian territory.
The influx is the largest movement of refugees from CAR, exceeding the total number for 2017, when about 2,000 fled into Chad. Many are reporting widespread human rights abuses committed by the members of these armed groups in the village alongside the CAR-Chad border.
The UNHCR warns that the number of people forced to flee ongoing violence in CAR is likely to continue. It reports the serious deterioration in that country's humanitarian situation has boosted the number of refugees and internally displaced to the highest ever recorded for CAR. Almost one-fourth of the population of some 4.6 million. UNICEF reports more than 1.1 million are displaced both within the country or as refugees. That means more than one in five Central Africans have been forced to flee their homes since civil war broke out a few years ago. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The World Bank says Kenya's economy grew only by 4.9% in 2017 due to drought and a prolonged election period, but it says the new year could bring a rebound. Ruben Chama reports from Nairobi.
According to a new report by the International Lender, East Africa's largest economy faced multiple headwinds in 2017. Initially, the bank expected the economy to grow in 2017 to 5.5%, but three issues brought instead lower growth: drought in the earlier half of the year, the ongoing slowdown in private sector credit growth, and a prolonged election cycle weakened private sector demand. Alan Dennis is a senior economist at the World Bank. He says measures can be taken to strengthen growth in the next 12 months.
I think given the susceptibility of Kenya's economy to drought, it will be important that measures are also put in place to sort of what I call climate-proof the agricultural sector again. This year, we expect a rebound in economic activity, but that is also predicated on some policy actions being taken to sort of contain some of the downside risks.
Rajiv Daya, a consultant with the World Bank Group, says officials in the country's financial sector have done a good job leading the economy out of a year of challenges. He says one way to boost growth in the new year is to make it easier for small businesses and entrepreneurs to have access to private credit. That includes measures to encourage competition among lenders that will lead to lower rates.
As you've seen in the report, we feel that the interest rate caps certainly have not helped the slowdown in credit that we've seen over a sustained period. And as a result, our first macro recommendation would be a repeal or removal of the interest rate caps. The second macro policy recommendation would be for the government to instill a more structured approach to the risk-free rate or government bond market.
Economist Alan Dennis adds that joint public-private initiatives can also boost the economy. He pointed to infrastructure projects like the investment in creating a new standard gauge railway.
What we're saying in the report is that broadly, it would be good to crowd in the private sector to participate in some of these infrastructure projects so as not to overburden the public purse. But certainly Kenya needs a competitive railway and transport and electricity, and I mean, this is what you use to attract investors. It's important to create jobs, so it is good. But what we're saying is that in order not to overburden the public sector to the extent that the private sector can be crowded in. So I'm not referring to a specific project per se, but you know, the broader landscape of infrastructure projects in the public, strong public interest.
The World Bank says if all goes well, the economy could grow to over 5.5% and perhaps nearly 6% in 2019. That could mean more jobs and make a dent in an unemployment rate that the United Nations Human Development Report estimates to be as high as 39%, one of the highest in East Africa. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
Zimbabwe's President Emmerson Mnangagwa met today with ailing opposition leader Morgan Tsvangirai, but ruled out forming a political coalition with him. As Sebastian Mofu reports from Harare, the opposition welcomed the historic visit, saying it sets the tone for peace ahead of this year's elections.
Accompanied by Vice President Constantino Chiwenga, the general who led a military operation that brought him to power in November last year, President Emmerson Mnangagwa visited former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai for about half an hour. After that, President Mnangagwa quashed speculation about forming a coalition government with Tsvangirai.
That's because you are allowed to live where a democratic country, people can vote for anything. Currently, there is no need.
The 75-year-old Zimbabwean leader also commented on the health of Tsvangirai, who has been battling with colon cancer.
He's fine, he's recuperating very well, and he says he's soon again going back to another medical checkups in South Africa.
2 years ago, Tsvangirai announced that he was being treated for the disease. Since then, he has been frail. On Friday, he did not speak to reporters after meeting President Mnangagwa. MDC Party Vice President Nelson Chamisa had this to say about President Mnangagwa's visit.
It's a welcome thing. It's African to care for one another, and it's very Zimbabwean. This is the new politics we want to see. The politics of peace, the politics of working together, the politics of feeling for each other and for one another. This is the direction, and we hope that it will be the kind of talk that will be walked and the kind of work that will be sustained. Because going forward into the elections, we want to see a peaceful election.
Zimbabwe is scheduled to hold elections around the middle of the year. Tsvangirai has not indicated if he will run, given the status of his health. Already, President Mnangagwa has expressed the intent to represent the ruling ZANU-PF party. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
Zimbabwe's new administration is under pressure to make the country's economy work. Its latest plan is to privatize some of the state-owned companies that have been losing money and in turn bleeding the national treasury. Reporter Kuzayi Zvinavashi speaks to young Zimbabweans to get their thoughts on the new policy.
Among the state-owned companies, or parastatals, that the government would like to sell are the National Airline and the National Railways of Zimbabwe, or NRZ, as well as the country's supplier of electricity. Munyaradzi Dodo, a young Zimbabwean, says it was a long time coming.
I think it's long overdue for some parastatals such as Air Zimbabwe, NRZ. Those have been mismanaged for a long time.
Dodo adds, the move may reflect failure, but it's a good move nonetheless.
I think for others, it's a sign that the government has failed to manage its work and doesn't really know how to operate viable entities, and you just leave that to the private sector. I think it's a good move in general.
Tino Muzavazi is an entrepreneur. He says the move will help government focus on top priorities.
It will actually give them more time to actually focus on trying to create policies that create conducive environments for actually businesses to start investing, which is what they're supposed to be doing, not running companies.
Michael Zimoyo, a tertiary student at a local university, agrees it is a step in the right direction. But he says government should retain oversight of certain sectors of the economy.
I think in as much as it's good to have investment, there are some services that we need government overlooking those. For example, transport. You cannot necessarily privatize all that. You still need government to be able to overlook.
He says another alternative would be for government to sell stakes in the parastatals to private interests, yet still retain the controlling power. Critics say the new policy should help attract foreign investment and turn these businesses into profit-making entities. They say investors want to make money, so weeding out corruption in the government-run companies should also be high in the agenda. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zvinavashe from Harare.
The UN Human Rights Office has condemned the violent response by government security forces in the DRC against people protesting the refusal of President Joseph Kabila to resign. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the Rights Office in Geneva.
The UN Human Rights Office says at least 5 people were killed, 92 injured, and around 180 arrested during recent protests in the Democratic Republic of Congo's capital, Kinshasa, and a number of other cities. Most of those arrested since have been released, but the UN expresses alarm at the brutal action of the security forces that allegedly fired live ammunition, rubber bullets, and tear gas grenades, in some cases at point-blank range. Human rights spokeswoman Liz Throssell says the casualty figures from the demonstrations on December 31st probably are higher than reported.
Our colleagues on the ground were denied access to morgues, hospitals, and detention centers. They were also sent away from these sites by defense and security forces, and so were unable to fully conduct their human rights monitoring work. Security forces are also reported to have fired tear gas inside churches, stopped people attending religious services, and stolen their personal property. This is an alarming development that impinges on freedom of religion or belief.
The government and opposition signed an agreement on December 31, 2016, stating that Kabila would step down as president when elections were held before the end of 2017. That timeline has come and gone, and the president remains in power, provoking the recent deadly demonstrations. The UN Rights Office is calling for credible and independent investigations into the alleged use of excessive force and to bring those responsible for human rights violations to justice. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. At 20 minutes past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. A recent flare-up in violence in Northwest Central African Republic sends thousands fleeing for their lives. The World Bank says Kenya's economy grew only by 4.9% in 2017 due to drought and a prolonged election period. And Zimbabwe's president met today with ailing opposition leader Morgan Tsvangirai, but ruled out forming a political coalition with him. For more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. The United States Africa Command, AFRICOM, has said ISIS Libya is likely to give priority on launching strikes on several targets, including some in the Libyan oil crescent. The Libyan National Army said that its forces were preparing to enter the city of Derna, east of Libya, and liberate it from the grip of ISIS. Rhiannon Smith is managing editor of Eye on ISIS in Libya. She explained to VOA's Mohammed Elshenawi how serious is such development to the already complicated situation in Libya.
I think AFRICOM's assessment of ISIS's likely strategy in Libya is correct. They have no territory now. They are severely weakened, but they do have some presence in the oil crescent, which is a very underpopulated, remote desert area. And therefore, it's relatively easier for them to attack oil infrastructure and pipelines and things like that than it is to potentially conduct attack on more populated or militarized areas. And the dangers of such an attack on oil pipelines, for example, it can really disrupt the economy, it can affect electricity supply, it can affect fuel supply, as well as increasing tensions locally. Therefore, this is a danger. We saw an attack like this just a few days ago on the 26th of December. It's not clear that that was ISIS that conducted the attack. However, in this case, they were able to repair the oil pipeline that was attacked quite quickly. They were sort of able to manage the risk that is posed. But I think the key thing to note here is that although the ISIS may conduct these type of attacks, there are also other actors in the oil crescent area. So Ibrahim Jadran and the so-called Benghazi Defense Brigade, who have a presence in this area and who oppose Khalifa Haftar's Libyan National Army, who are in that area, could also conduct these kind of attacks. And therefore, this is definitely something to watch out for, but it's not necessarily ISIS that's conducting them.
Brigadier General Ahmed al-Masmari, spokesman for the Libyan National Army, said the army was preparing to enter the city of Derna, east of Libya, and liberate it from the grip of ISIS. Does that mean liberating Derna from real ISIS fighters or Islamic groups opposing General Haftar?
Well, when the Libyan National Army say ISIS or terrorists, they usually mean any kind of Islamist groups that are opposing Haftar and the LNA. So this could be either. In the case of Derna, what we have seen is that since sort of summer 2017, the LNA has really ramped up its siege of Derna. So it stopped goods and people going in and out of the city. And that's because Derna itself is controlled by a jihadi coalition called the Derna Mujahideen Shura Council. And what's happening now is the LNA is planning to move the rest of its forces to Derna to try overtake and take control of the city. The key thing to note here, though, is although ISIS had a strong presence in the city in 2014, and many of the ISIS fighters, the Libyan ISIS fighters, do originate from Derna, the Derna Mujahideen Shura Council actually fought against ISIS, although they have similar ideologies. They fought against ISIS, and actually in recent weeks there's been a spate of this is more because it's jihadis and people that oppose Haftar, not because they are ISIS supporters or members.
What should the U.S. do to prevent ISIS Libya from establishing a safe haven in the war-torn North African country?
Well, the key thing here is that AFRICOM, which is the U.S. sort of military branch that's operating Libya, has conducted some airstrikes recently and obviously in 2016, which helped to militarily evict ISIS from its territory. And this was important. However, what we're seeing now, because the tactics have gone to more sort of guerrilla tactics, they're very small, dissipated fighters or cells, it's very difficult to use those kind of tactics against them. Therefore, really what will kind of prevent this resurgence or potential resurgence of ISIS is to really try and solve the Libyan political and military crisis. So that's, you know, resolving their political divisions, getting the institutions working again, restoring a sense of stability and rule of law. So I think from the US perspective, it's really a case of working with the different political factions on the ground, supporting the UN-led process, and trying to support this process of political reconciliation with, well, the current plan for that is to hold elections in 2018. Whether or not that's the best strategy, I think it's supporting that kind of political reconciliation is what will best help this stage to prevent ISIS from really getting a foothold there.
That was Rhiannon Smith, managing editor of ISIS Eye on ISIS, speaking with VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawy. U.S. President Donald Trump has disavowed granting White House access to Michael Wolff, author of a book to be published today that portrays a chaotic initial year for the president. In a tweet late yesterday, the president also gave Steve Bannon, who ran Trump's presidential campaign in its final quarter, a new nickname. Trump said on Twitter, quote, "I authorized zero access to the White House. Actually turned him down many times. For author of a phony book I never spoke to him for. Full of lies, misrepresentations, and sources that don't exist. Look at this guy's past and watch what happens to him and Sloppy Steve," unquote. Earlier yesterday, the White House press secretary had to field a barrage of questions for a second consecutive day from reporters about the book. "Most people in the U.S. could probably care less about a book full of lies," responded Sarah Huckabee Sanders, who characterized Fire and Fury as trash and something a fired employee wanted to peddle. That fired employee is Bannon, was also chief strategist in the White House for the initial 7 months of Trump's presidency. Bannon is quoted extensively by Wolf in the 336-page book. It went on sale today despite efforts by Trump's lawyers to keep it off store shelves. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to The Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Curtis Bynum, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Hi, this is Victor Beatty, managing editor of VOA News. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscasts every hour on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondent reports from around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.
Looking for something? Headline news, interviews, analysis? We've got it all on voaafrica.com.
voaafrica.com.